Hey, what's good, everybody? It's Justin Miller. This is another episode of the Legends of Athletics podcast. I don't feel like I have to reintroduce myself every time, but it's necessary. And I hope you guys are having a great day. And I'm glad that you're taking this time right now to be a listener of this podcast and to be an active listener and press play and share this with a friend, share this with your neighbor, share this with your family, your coworker, whatever you feel or your heart's desire is. I thank you for making us a part of your life. For those of you who are new to this podcast, I would like to say welcome to the family. And I want to send my gratitude to you as well for being a new listener. I hope you hit that subscribe button and make us a part of your life daily or your weekly routine as well. You guys know what day it is, man. It's Sunday. I got to give you some more heat. I got to give you another great episode. I got to give you that quality. I got to give you that time. I got to give you the passion. And I just love doing this, man. I love what I do. But before we jump into the episode, make sure that you go to social media right now. Follow us on Instagram at Legends of Athletics 19. On Instagram, Legends of Athletics on Facebook, Legends of Ath on Twitter. And if you don't have any of those three platforms as far as social media, then go to legendsofathletics19@gmail.com and shoot us an email, and we'll be more than accepting of that. I got to get on my A game. I'm stumbling a little bit with these words, but it's going to be all good, though. For today, It's another Wild World of Sports episode. This is episode 2. We're going to talk about everything from footwork drills to the Myles Garrett deal. For those of you who may be unfamiliar with it, we're going to visit that. We're going to talk about Kawhi Leonard signs with the Clippers. This is a little different for the episode, but I'm going to give you guys my take on it because I am a LeBron James fan, a.k.a. Lakers fan, for the moment. So I have to give you guys my take on this. And a few tips for us, for those football players getting ready to check in for the fall camps as we get ready to roll into football season. We're 40 some odd days away at this point, and I am excited. I cannot wait. I love watching football. That was one of my first loves. I love watching guys compete, and I love just seeing it, man. Something about it. It never gets old. So with that, I've kind of given you guys, don't forget to go over and like the website. And buy some gear from the website. I'm trying to get the website more active and give you guys some more options on there. I also have some programs I'm about to add to it. And guys, just show your support by getting some gear. And we're gonna also do more giveaways on the podcast. And we also, of course, you guys know football season is coming up. And so like we did last year, we started that thing last year. And we're going to do it again this year. We're going to have some giveaways when football rolls around. So, guys, make sure you stay tuned and keeping up with the news of Legends of Athletics and stay with us. So the first thing, I was talking to a friend, and we were talking about footwork drills. Of course, if you go to Instagram and you look for it, don't even take a whole hot 5 minutes. You will see plenty of people on there doing furious footwork drills. When I say furious, I'm talking about Luis Bodinho type, like fast feet and just moving. But are furious footwork drills flawed? And that is a double-edged sword. That's a double-edged sword. Is there more to the puzzle than just speed ladders and variations thereof? I'm gonna answer this question very as detailed as I possibly can. I'm going to answer this question as detailed as I can. When it comes to agility training is, I'm going to tell you, agility training is the ability to change direction on a dime and change direction and be multi-directional. So things like the ladder and some of these other drills where you're just moving in a linear type deal, those are not really agility drills. They're more just like fast feet and getting your feet moving. Of course, this week, I forgot whose post it was, but I was looking at a post, and I'm going to try to describe this drill as best I can. It was a guy on there. He trains in, I think the guy trained in, like, Alabama. I think it was in Alabama, or is it California? One or two. Anyway, he had a drill where he had too many hurdles set up. He had two on the offensive side, two on the defensive side, and basically, him and this guy were moving in motion like a dance. Like, they were just going side to side. Like, you know, just lateral, just bam, 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 bam. And then the offensive guy would take off and run straight, and a defensive guy would basically mimic and mirror that from a defensive standpoint. And so I commented on there, and, you know, they were saying this drill was great, and I was like, well, what's the point of the drill? And the guy replied, no lie. He said, fast feet. It's all we working on, fast feet. I'm going to be honest with y'all. In football, it's really no, like, fast feet sounds remedial from coming from a trainer. Like, there's a thing called foot fire, but that's from a receiving standpoint. From a defensive standpoint, there is nothing on a football field where a defender will move laterally 2 to 3 times while trying to cover a receiver. And you already start off in the inside with inside leverage. You're not gonna go back and forth like a swinging pendulum to cover a receiver. So when you look at stuff like that, it becomes flawed because then it's more of a show than actual application. I feel like as a trainer, for me, the thing that I like to do is everything that I do, I like it to be applicable. And I also like it to have the ability to be transferable. So if I can't transfer what we are doing in training to the field or on the field of play, I'm wasting your time and mine. And as a trainer, my goal and my job, the reason you hired me is to get better, not to stay the same or just say, oh, I can do this showboat drill, and so I'm better because I can do the showboat drill. No, my thing is transference. Can you transfer what you're doing? Does it transfer to the field of play? Can you do that realistically on the field of play? The thing with some of the footwork drills, the thing with some of them is, they're too long, and it's randomization is great, but some of them are too long and too random. Everybody, I think, not everybody, but a lot of trainers now, because let's be real, in the sports performance world, we are still developing, and so right now we don't really have a gold standard to go by. Because sports is hard to just wrap around, and then, like, we don't really have just a gold standard as far as sports performance coaching. Strength and conditioning, you have the gold standard. You have the CSCS, you have NASCM, stuff like that, different organizations to jump, but you don't have that in sports performance because it's so different and it's new and it's growing still. But with some of these drills, they are too long. You are not going to do footwork for 5 to 10 seconds on a football field if you're on offense and get open. If you're on defense and defend anybody, it's just realistically not going to happen. And so a lot of trainers are trying to go viral. Like, it's nothing. Like, if I just really sat down and really just came up with, excuse me, how can I go viral? I'm sure I could create 2 or 3 drills at the least in 30 minutes or less that would be cool and freaky to watch, but that would make me go viral. But that would be doing a disservice to my client that I'm training at the time, because if you go viral, let's think about it like this. I go viral, or my client goes viral, but then when the film comes on in the fall, they don't do anything. What was the whole point of going viral in the beginning? The thing is, be discovered for your talents, for your playing ability, not just because you are a great drill person. And that's the thing in the football community now that's so big is we have so many players out there now who are just drill machines. Like, if you take them to a camp, you really can't tell the difference between if they can really play or they just perfected the art of doing a drill. Same thing with 7-on-7. Some kids, you take the pads off, and it's like backyard football with plays, and they just excel. But then when you put the pads on, they go MIA. You can't find them. You don't know what happened to this kid who was, you know, so impressive when they weren't playing man-to-man. They weren't playing bump and run. Or even if they just came up and played feather coverage. You know, this kid, he goes MIA, and it's so many kids like that. I think that's why when it comes to 7-on-7 and things like that, you know, you just have to do a service. And even in that, I mean, it's not regulated to the point where some of these coaches are actually coaching. Some of them just got 7-on-7 teams. It's kind of the same thing as, like, basketball AAU. They just got teams because they wanted a team and just put some guys out there because they wanted to coach or say they were a coach. And they're doing the players a disservice. And, I mean, I'm not trying to go on a rant or a long tirade about it, but we got to think about the kids at the end of the day, because a lot of our careers, us older guys that are no longer in the game, our careers are over. The sun has set. The final song has been sung. The fat lady has sung. The building is empty. The stage has been cleared. And the janitor has swept the floor. And it's over with. So our thing is, just like with me when it comes to training, the thing about it is you have to have some sort of motivation to that I really want to do this for the kids. And I'm in the best interest of the kids. And I want to see them excel and do the best that they can do. Not the best that I can do, because your career is over with. If it's meant for you to be a professional trainer or a trainer that's going out there and being on the pinnacles of success that no one could have fathomed before, then do that. But just doing it off a whim and just because that's something that you want to do, it's not going to cut it. That's just like trainers out there doing the same drills that they do for the pregame warm-up, and you doing those in the off-season training, like, that's going to get somebody better. Or you doing the same thing that your coach taught you back in 98 or 2008, and you think that's going to, like, okay, some stuff is the same, but a lot of stuff didn't evolve to be better. I consider myself a young but old school trainer, because I do believe in a lot of the old school ways. I keep it simple, but I'm also effective. But at the same time, we have to look and say, well, am I just doing this because I love it, or am I just doing it because I'm trying to be the next big thing? Man, the kids are first and foremost, and so, you know, you have to, some of these drills have their point, but doing long, drawn-out drills just become the next big thing is not going to cut it. So, for me to answer this question, when I come up with agility drills and I think about how I'm going to warm the guys up, I keep it simple, as I said before, and I keep it short, sweet, to the point, because everything in sports is succinct and to the point. In football, basketball, what have you, is quick and to the point. It's not long and drawn out. Just like people teaching these receivers to skip, step, and then go, it ain't that deep. So it's quick and to the point. For the most part, just to give you guys a mirror or maybe a sample of what a training session would look like, of course, I do own a speed ladder. I start on the speed ladder, or start my guys on the speed ladder, just to get the feet warm, just to raise the internal body temperature and just do a few things like that. But we are not, our purpose of the ladder is not to get better. It's not to improve agility. It's just to warm up. That's the only thing we do. Now, when it comes to improving agility, what I do use a lot of are cones and the agility rings, and using those in conjunction with maybe some mini hurdles. If I'm trying to teach a receiver to stay in line, using the mini hurdles to get around, then get back in line on the route, and things like that. But I mean, those are some things that if I just gonna give you a sample without giving too much, those are just some things that I do. And like I said, I mean, the ladder is great for warming the feet up, warming the legs up, but not as far as improving agility, because agility encompasses the hips, the core, and all that, and you just can't accomplish all of that by using the speed ladder only. And so with that as well, as far as being a sports performance coach, there's an importance that you must put also on strength and balance within the regimen of the agility work, because without adding in strength and balance, then, you know, you aren't keeping the players safe. As far as when they do these drills and when they do, they perform these movements within competition. And that's the first thing. First, we want to keep them safe. We also want to prehab, and we want to prevent as many injuries as possible. So allowing the player to do these drills and get stronger, strengthening them, and improving the balance allows them to know where they are in space as well. And if you know where you are in space, you're able to, you know, keep yourself safer. And also, the strength will also protect us. And even with that, you know, also creating, when we're doing some of the strength exercise, some of we just do for pure explosiveness, so we're not really worried about a mind muscle connection. But then some of them, when we slow them down, we are doing those for a mind-muscle connection, because we do need to know where we are in space, and we do need to know, be able to feel each and every muscle. That way, if we are in a situation where an athlete may get injured, then we can rehab that. We can rehab it effectively. And so when they go to the physical therapist, what have you, they're able to feel the muscle that should be there and strengthen that muscle, and not just go through the motions or be so explosive that they can't feel any of their muscles. And so, you know, that just makes for a more effective rehab, because if you don't have a mind-muscle connection, then you can rehab it, but you just won't be at top performance as you may want to be. And so it's important to do the footwork drill, the agility drills or footwork drills, but it's also important to add strength and balance within that as well, within your session. So if you're doing hour-long sessions, or you're doing an hour and a half sessions, what have you, make sure you schedule those within the session as well, because those are important. And that's just like within a lot of most of the sessions that I do with my guys, my football guys especially, we're going to do plyometrics. That's just a given, and things like that, because you want to be an explosive athlete to be able to move and get where you need to get without taking so much time. And you know, as I said before, we were talking about the benefits of extended drills. There's not really any when you're looking at it from an aspect of agility. As far as conditioning goes, I mean it plays a small role in conditioning, but as I said before, sports are succinct. Most plays in football last 5 seconds or less, unless it's a Hail Mary. It may go for a little longer, but most of them are 5 seconds or less, so it's really no benefit to doing drills that last 5+ seconds. Same thing with basketball, same thing with baseball, soccer. Soccer, you may be able to get away with doing extended drills because the ball may just be on one side of the field longer, but you wouldn't do agility drills that long. It would more so just be conditioning, because like I said before, it's really no point in doing extended drills. I'm just sitting here, and even when I was doing my notes and doing the research and studying and stuff, it's just nothing, no point. Like, it's just, you get nothing from it except for just an extended drill and a bunch of movement and motion for nothing that doesn't even correlate. And so, you know, guys, for the athletes out there that, you know, surf Instagram and things like that, just be careful about what you jump in and what you add to your routine. If you train on your own, just be very conscious and ask yourself the question, does it make sense? Can I transfer this? Is it something is it a realistic movement to what I do or the activity that I do within my sport? And, you know, that if the answer is no to any of those questions, then it's probably not going to do or have a lot of benefit for you. But with that, let's jump into the next thing. Myles Garrett. For those who may not know, Myles Garrett is a defensive end for the Cleveland Browns. He stands at 6'4", 271 pounds, and he, this past week, last week, he went viral for a couple of lifts that he did within the Cleveland Browns training facility. Within these lifts, he did a 675-pound supposed box squat or quarter squat. I'm not sure what he was going for. And a 50-pound dumbbell box jump. Now, with this 675-pound box squat, first of all, I didn't even see a box back there. Secondly, the form was very bad. His inner quad VMOs were very weak. His knees were caving in on this squat. And just being honest, a professional athlete, especially at that level in football, you don't really have to go that heavy at that point because they lifted weight so many years before. But we're not gonna jump all the way into that. But you know, the squat was very nasty, very gruesome. It was very uncomfortable to watch. And a lot of coaches were talking about it. I mean, because this happened at the Browns facility, so it's hard to imagine that the strength coach is looking on and that you have that bad of form and it wasn't corrected, and y'all put this video out for everybody to see that he was putting in the work. I'm assuming that was the point of the video. I'm not sure. And then after that, he had 50-pound dumbbell box jump. So he had 50 pounds in each hand. He did a pretty, it was a pretty high box jump. So, I mean, he had the explosiveness to get up there, but it again, it was just sloppy and not very comfortable to watch. I would not suggest, it's really no point again at having 50 pounds of dumbbells in each hand to do box jumps. Maybe a heavy medicine ball, maybe something 20, 30 pounds, 40 pounds, but you know, dumbbells really, to me, it's no point. Like, the medicine ball would make more sense. But he did those, and of course, again, like I said, they were kind of sloppy. Well, it ain't no kind, it was sloppy and very hard to watch. You know, he was getting up there but wasn't extending when he wasn't standing up, so he was just like a half, like a squat position when he got to the top of the box, and then of course got, you know, got down from the box, and it was just uncomfortable to watch. And so one thing that I thought about is this was a bad look for strength and conditioning coaches, because it shows that it's not about what you know, but who you know. There are a lot of great strength and conditioning coaches out there, very capable of doing their job and doing it very well. But there are also some who just do the job because they knew a friend that got and got the job. For him to do these lifts at the facility, and for them to be as sloppy as they were, and for those guys to look on, and him potentially injure himself from lack of form and just not correcting him and putting the video out and stuff like that, it just shows that, you know, sometimes we, as I said before, with the footwork, we're doing stuff to go viral, and we're not doing it for the betterment of the athlete. And so I just felt like that was a bad look for strength and conditioning coaches. I mean, as I said before, the flawed mechanics, and just, you know, it could have been better, man, and you know, could have asked him to drop weight. But of course, I know, you know, with athletes, that personality and, you know, ego lifting and stuff like that. But that's where, as a strength and conditioning coach, you have to step in and be the safe haven for the athlete and save them from themselves and self-destruction, and lead them to a better way and a better way of doing things without killing themselves. Now, the logic behind this, I do understand. Some people don't really understand. I understand doing box squats, you know what I'm saying, because they have their place. And you know, box squats, you can cycle on and off box squats, just like you can cycle on and off back squats, front squats, Bulgarian squats, split squats, things like that. You can cycle on and off. And quarter squats even have their place when it comes to speed training. But to do it for that heavy and with that lack of form is too much, and you're not really doing anything. You're not even getting the benefits of power training with what he was doing. And so you know, again, the mechanics could have been a lot better, but you know, as coaches, we have to cue the athlete. We have to make sure the athletes are in good position, and we have to make sure that we're protecting the athletes from themselves, as I said before. And that's just why I mean, I fought the athletes. I mean, I fought the coaches and the people who were on looking for not checking him and trying to help him be the best he can be. But the logic I understood is just the, you know, you understand the message. It's just the delivery was off. And so I hope that he took time to go back and look at the videos and maybe switch something up. And maybe if he comes back out with another video, that it just, maybe it's a before and after, or something that just, you know, shows that he's improved on those lifts, and maybe drop some weight, or you know, just do those lifts better, because a lot of young athletes are watching, and a lot of younger athletes also take into account, well, he doesn't do this, this and that and the other, especially if you're a professional. And so you have to watch that, and that affects more than just that person themselves. So here it is. So this week, big news, finally yesterday, Kawhi Leonard decided his fate. Actually, it was Friday night. He decided where he wanted to go. So where did this man decide to go? So as a Lakers supporter now, I can't say I'm a fan because I'm a fan of LeBron, but as a Lakers supporter now, I just, you know, I was very optimistic the first couple of days about Kawhi coming, but the longer it drew out, the more I was not confident that he was coming and that he may do something that was off the wall. But he decided to go to the Clippers. To me, you know, to answer one of the first question, I feel like him going to the Clippers did make them contenders, especially with them having the addition of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, and already having Patrick Beverley. They're going to be a great defensive team. The scoring, I'm kind of iffy on. Not sure if they can score enough, but they will be great defensively. And, of course, the defense wins championships. Case in point, this year's champions were the Toronto Raptors. They had great defense, which created easier offense. And so I feel like they'll be contenders next year. With Kawhi signing and taking Paul George with him, it kind of left Russell Westbrook in an odd predicament. But at the same time, with them doing that, it did restore power in NBA to be very balanced. Now we have a lot of teams that have two superstars and a lot of great role players. And so next year watching the NBA, it'll be a lot more interesting to watch. It'll be a lot more fun to watch. It'll be like watching, I can't really just say without the season happening yet. I don't want to put it and say it'll be like watching the golden era again, which was 90s basketball. But it'll be very fun to watch. Maybe if they could change some rules, it'll be better. Excuse me, it'll be better, but it'll be very fun to watch with a lot of teams having a 1-2 punch. You know, you got Kyrie and KD in Brooklyn. You got, of course, AD and LeBron in LA. You got PG and Kawhi in LA as well. And everybody just has that 1-2 punch, and you can't go wrong with it. Of course, you got Chris Paul and James Harden in Houston, and there you have it. The only team like that lost out completely, and I'm not trying to make fun. But the team that lost out completely this offseason, and they did not make any additions, did not get better, not one bit, was the New York Knicks. And so that's very unfortunate for them that they were not able to capitalize on this great free agency pool that they had this summer and capitalize on that. As far as Kawhi Leonard goes, I mean, I feel like he was a great he handled the free agency, of course, different than a lot of superstars would. But he handled it great as far as dragging his feet along, because it put the LA Lakers in a predicament where they weren't able to, they weren't able to sign as many other great role players as they may have wanted to, maybe like a Seth Curry and some more others that were out there, because he took so long with the free agency, basically waiting it out almost until the very end. And they also were able to land AD, but we weren't able to get, you know, another superstar because we were so focused in on Kawhi Leonard coming along and doing what he wanted to do. But, I mean, if anybody remembers this last season before when they were trying to get him out of San Antonio, I mean, it was a little bit of talk of him going to the LA Lakers, but it was more talk about him going to the Clippers last year. And so it was kind of a shocker then that he signed with them, but not as much as I think people are putting on it, because if you really think about it, it wasn't that big of a shocker, because like I said, last year when he was trying to get out of San Antonio, he was talking about going to the Clippers then. And the Clippers, like, honestly, they have a very solid roster, and they have some depth. And so, I mean, they not going to be no pushovers. And L.A., I mean, I feel like the championship's going to go through L.A., either the Lakers or the Clippers. And even with my Lakers, you know, we're going to have a fight in our hands. But I think with a great leader like LeBron, and I think with the addition of AD being long and athletic, and even picking up Boogie and having retaining Rondo, picking up Dudley and getting Danny Green, hey, I think we're in a good spot. I mean, I think we got some depth, and we can make some noise in the West. And of course, you know, we get to them playoffs, baby. You already know we finna roll and try to get on to them finals. And so, I mean, I feel like that was a great. We had a good offseason. I mean, we didn't get everything we wanted, but we got a lot of what we wanted. And so, a lot of teams got better. And like I said, it was just unfortunate for the Knicks that they weren't able to pick up anybody within this free agency time. And so with that, I'm going to get ready to wrap this podcast up, and I'm going to leave you guys with a few tips for football players getting ready to check in fall camp within the next 3 to 4 weeks. Of course, you got 3 to 4 weeks left in that weight room, putting the finishing touches on the body. I hope you guys took the time this summer to get those quality reps in the weight room, get that body tough, because the football season is long and rigorous. And, of course, you know, the things you do in the summer prepare you for the winter. And football rides until it gets cold. And so you had to keep that body up. Of course, you had to lift within the season as well. But the things you do in the summer play and pay large dividends within the fall and the winter. And so a few things I would say going into fall camp for those guys who who may cramp a lot, but even for those who don't, the thing I would say is hydrate. Make sure you're getting enough water in. Also, make sure you're getting salt in your body as well. That helps with cramping. But make sure you hydrate, and you might want to sprinkle in a little salt into your water as well. Make sure you hydrate. Make sure you get acclimated to the heat. Spend some time outside. Spend some time in the sun. Don't wait until fall camp to get out there in the sun and then think you just turn it on, turn it off. That's one of the things, too, that makes guys cramp up because they're not used to the heat. And I know, of course, here in Mississippi, it's, you got a double-edged sword because it's hot and humid. So make sure you're getting out there, getting some sun, and spending some time in that heat and letting the body get used to it. You don't necessarily have to run around in the heat of the day, but around like 3 and 4 o'clock, just get out there. You may want to move around. If you ain't got the energy to really move around, maybe y'all hit it hard in the weight room, then just sit out in there. You know, just sit out there for about an hour or so and just let your body get used to it. Get used to breathing in it, this and that, whatever. But I would prefer that you get out and move around in it a little bit, do some drills or maybe run a little bit and or play some basketball, what have you. You don't necessarily have to do your sports specific training in the heat all the time. The other thing is, if you're looking to get into supplements that may reduce cramping, magnesium is good. Magnesium is a little more costly, but if you can afford it, get some magnesium in you. That will help with cramping because a lot of us are very low on magnesium anyway, and we do need that, and that's an essential micronutrient and something that'll be great. You know, supplements get a bad rap, but magnesium is something that's great to add to your regimen to help with those cramps and things like that. And the last thing I will say, if you put in the quality work this summer, trust the work that you have done has prepared you for the rewards on game day. Michael Jordan said something that's very that stands out a whole lot, and he said, when you get the reps in, you put the practice in, it eliminates the fear. So if you put in the reps and you put in the practice and you've done it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, you will not be afraid no matter what sport you play when the lights come on. And so it won't be hard. You ain't got to do nothing extra to impress the coaches or do anything extreme. Just get out there and do what you've been doing the whole time, and it'll pay off. And the rewards will speak for themselves, and your labor will not be in vain. And until next time, kids, you guys know what it is. Make sure you're doing things the legends do. Make sure you're getting 1% better each and every day. And make sure that you're taking the time to make the most of each and every day. Carpe diem, seize the day. And until next time, guys, remember, as always, be legendary.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.